Also, what is a troubling trend is it appears that in a number of cases, the court's decisions are collapsing the two-step Alice test into one step. And what's particularly troublesome in relationship to the guidelines is that the guidelines really were, I think, a significant response to the fact that Federal Circuit case law finding claims eligible for patentability were more often than not being found at the step one of Alice rather than step two. But we've seen some recent cases where the decisions are muddling the aspect of the two separate steps into one. And deciding eligibility at step two rather than step one. Also, with respect to the precedent from the Federal Circuit in the Berkheimer case, whether the claimed invention had routine, conventional, well-known elements was a question of fact, and it was left to step two of the analysis. However, we've seen some recent cases from the Federal Circuit where the court was looking to unexpected results being as a requirement if the claim did recite conventional elements. So the inventive step analysis under the Alice Mayo was actually seeming to bring in a non-obviousness secondary considerations or objective indicia of non-obviousness. Also, we've seen that previously in the McRow case, you could have eligibility based upon improving the user experience, and a number of cases relied upon an improvement over the prior art to show eligibility. In the American Axle case, this claimed invention dealt with tuning a mass and stiffness of at least one liner to reduce vibrations. The court found that the claimed invention was directed to the abstract idea of the application of Hooke's law for dampening vibrations. And it seemed as though what was happening in the panel decision was, again, the court seemed to be treating the Section 101 analysis as a Section 112 written description or enablement or a 112B claim definiteness. The court took the case en banc. The court sitting as a whole could not resolve the split. Judges Moore and Stoll in particular were very much concerned that the subject matter eligibility standard was embracing other conditions of patentability and essentially swallowing all of patent law. So what we found here probably was that the court seems to be using an enablement test, but looking only at the claims to see if there's some kind of solving of a technological problem. I have a question that popped up, which is an excellent question, and the audience was asking whether this analysis seems to be in line with the old Supreme Court's O'Reilly v. Morse. And I would say that that's exactly the case where I would say the more modern legal authorities would look at the O'Reilly v. Morse case more as a scope of enablement problem rather than a Section 101 problem. And so we're seeing this creep back into a 101 analysis.